Jason, Gabe, we're on chapter 14 on Out of the Silent Planet. How are you doing?
Jason, I am fantastic. I'm doing better than Ransom, I think. Oh my gosh.
So
how's it going, man? How you doing?
Good. You know, this chapter was interesting because the first two pages, I was getting kind of bored and I was like, oh no, please don't. Just no, let's not have exposition and just talk. Like, but then it really ramped up in that second half and then obviously the ending. So I had this kind of wave of emotions. It, you know, it's very much like the chapter where he looks up at this mountain and he's like, oh my gosh, that's how I felt at the beginning of this chapter. And then we started climbing it. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, so I appreciated some of the exposition.
You unlike always you. Do. You always do.
It's because you're like, I just want the action, man.
I just want to get
him
to
on
it.
The move.
Come on.
Yeah. Enough thinking. Do something.
Well, it's just like, okay, I get it. You keep second guessing yourself, and you're like, well, maybe Orsa is part of the Sorns. Maybe he's the chief Sorn. Maybe he's the sacrifice to which the Sorns bring him to, and all this other stuff. I'm like, yeah. Okay, enough. Like, okay, but I will say this: my favorite. Like line that he has is when he's talking about, when he says that these thoughts are coming back into his brain, and he puts a stop to it immediately. And just the wording, I'll look at it as I'll shut up so that way you can fill in the space while I'm looking for this. But it reminded me of sometimes whenever I have, you know, those sinful thoughts that kind of creep into your head that you're trying to get rid of, and they just slowly come back, or those unrational fears start closing in on you.
Yeah. See, I really appreciated that with Ransom. I definitely identified like what you're saying, you know, when you're feeling weak, or not as confident, and just the urge to give up or the urge to give in to negative thoughts, whatever the case may be, you know, early on here in the first paragraph, you know, as he's, you know, okay, so just a recap, a reset, right? Hyoy has just been shot. Huynh says, you have got to get, you know, to Oyarsa fast. And this is the way you should go. And there's a short way, but it's a hard way. And you have to climb up over a mountain. So he's off. On the run, trying to make sure he puts distance between him and whoever shot the rifle bullet. He believes it to be Weston or Divine. And as he's making his way, this line here, it says, he became aware of a strong impulse to shout out to Weston and Divine and give himself up. And so I underlined that. It struck me because even though he's had these amazing experiences with the Hrasa, and even to the point of hearing an Eldil and having this duty and conviction to follow through with what Huynh is telling him to do, what Oyarsa is calling him to do through that Eldil. Even still, there's just this urge to just fight it and give up, to stop running, to stop pushing it. And I think that's just so real. You know, so I was talking with my kids the other day, and they I've mentioned before, my girls are in music lessons. They play piano, they play violin, and they were practicing, and one of them was saying, hi, I just don't think I'm going to do very well in this song. And I was like, no, you can't just give up. You can't, just because there's an obstacle, just because there's a challenge, you can't just give up. That's something that we have to continue to fight to overcome. And so, you know, this one little comment she made turned into a big, long conversation with Dad, of course. But the realization that, like, this is a real thing. And if we were left to our own devices, man, we wouldn't do a thing. We would just give up constantly. We would be a puddle of nothingness. We would have no progress, no success, no movement. But he has this moment of clarity. And later on in that paragraph, it says that his efforts to rely on his own judgment in Malankandra had so far ended tragically enough. So he made a strong resolution, defying in advance all changes of mood, that he would faithfully carry out the journey to Meldalorn if it could be done. So the idea that, you know what, I need to stop this, because whenever I try and take control on my own, it does not go well. Like, it really doesn't go well. So I'm just going to do this, and I don't care what my mood is. I don't care what my urges are. I am making a resolution right now to carry through and follow through. And it's that persistence, and I think that grace that's given to him in that moment that pushes him to make that strong resolution to overcome those urges.
So he, and this is why I think I was getting frustrated, because he knew better. Like you said, he was thinking, okay, put this aside, push it out of my brain. Every time a doubt crept in, every time fear crept in, he's like, as he said, like he would put aside, or in the sentence C.S. Lewis would say, then he took another step. Then he would take another step. And so for me, it's just like, okay, come on. I get the frustration. I understand the technique of all this. I just was like, okay, let's move on. But I did like when he says the near kind of the second half on, at least in my book, where he was talking about, he was thinking about the different higher levels of, and comparing it with the earth with respect to where we rank, like the arts and poetry versus intellectual endeavors versus the scientific world and reason and reality, and where we rank those as superiority and what is superior, and then trying to tie those in with the creatures that are on Malankandra. But then kind of quickly is like, okay, it's a mumbo jumbo. Love that part there. But Ransom pulled himself up. Like, again, he's like, okay, I gotta stop thinking about this. Just one foot in front of the other, one hand climbing, like, just got to keep moving.
Yeah, yeah. I think what we're seeing is, like, this internal struggle. Like, this is, like, spiritual warfare is what's going on here. Even in that same paragraph that you're talking about a little bit further on, he's thinking about, like, wait, I'm being delivered into this place of danger. But then he realizes it was not possible, he told himself, that the Hrasa should obey any evil or monstrous creature. And I thought about that. That line struck me, because here's these creatures, these beings that he has come to know and develop a relationship with and trust in and even faith in. And so because he's come to know them, he knows that they would not obey someone evil. They would not direct him to someone evil. So it's the faith he has in them that helps him to overcome that series of negative thoughts in that moment. Now, I was thinking about our relationship with people, and when we are encouraging them to go further in their relationship with God or to do something, you know, that is a challenge. And you know, if you go and tell a stranger to do a certain thing, they're not going to do it. They're not going to find it within themselves to overcome that, because they don't know you. There's no relationship there. But when someone knows who you are, or when we know someone, like, we can rely on that and go, okay, everything I know about this person is good. So I'm going to take what they say seriously and really, you know, either consider what they're saying or try and act on it. Even from a parent to a kid standpoint, the importance of, like, passing on the faith, you know, like, it's important that parents live a life of virtue and model the faith as much as they can, so that kids have this same thought that it's not possible, you know, that mom or dad would obey any evil or monstrous creature. So I'm going to keep fighting through whatever negativity I have because I trust them and I love them. So that line in particular struck me. It's kind of right before what you're talking about. But we really are seeing this battle, this interior battle back and forth. And still through it, like you're saying, he's just pushing. He keeps pushing through.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
The line that I loved was, and it's from a long sentence, so bear with me, where he's thinking about these old things, as he says, those old terrestrial fears of some alien cold intelligence, superhuman in power, superhuman in cruelty, which had utterly faded from his mind among the Harasa, rose clamoring for readmission. Yeah, I love that last, rose clamoring for readmission. It's just,
yeah.
You think back on all of those irrational fears that we grew up with, and this goes into what you were saying. And the way I was thinking about this first part of the chapter in this struggle, like you're talking about, is twofold. One is St. Paul, when he says, you know, when I was a boy, I thought I was a boy. I thought I was a child. I reasoned as a child. But when I became a man, I put away childish things. And so you kind of see Ransom turning into a man on Melisandre, as he says kind of later on, where he's like, you know, thinking back where I was as a man when I first landed on this planet, I wasn't a man. I was a boy. I had to basically be rebirthed into this new world. And now I've grown and matured. And that leads to the second point, which is it's kind of like his frontal lobe of his brain is now fully developed, and he's not letting the back end of his brain take over anymore. He's like, as you were saying perfectly, and that's part of the chapter where he's using the frontal lobe to think through his fears, to say that wouldn't make sense because of X, Y, and Z, like you already said.
Yeah. Yeah. And this very much is like he was in the bosom, if you will, the warm, nurturing environment of being loved on by the Harasa and being part of that community and really experiencing that. And now you're on your own. And I mean, Jason, you know, you're in ministry. I was in ministry. How many times do we see, you know, young adults, young people, even grownups have some kind of an encounter, some kind of an experience? We form them, we help them the best we can, but then at a certain point they go on their own, whether it be to college or to work or to a different life situation. And that's really where the real battle begins, because it's really easy to be on fire or faithful when you're in an environment that cultivates that and breeds that. It's when you go to the cold loneliness of the woods, when you have people chasing you down and negative thoughts creeping up, like that's where the rubber meets the road. And that's where the rubber is meeting the road for Ransom. And he's fighting through it and successfully. And that's really awesome. And just like what you're saying, in the next paragraph, the sentence that really stood out to me was, he says, now in the clear light of an accepted duty, he felt fear indeed, but with it a sober sense of confidence in himself and in the world, and even an element of pleasure. And I thought about this, like, this is what Hyoi was talking about with the Hanakra, when that we love the Hanakra, it gives us purpose, that he longs to kill us and we long to kill him. And when I was at that place and I drank from the waters, it was the greatest drink I'll ever drink except for one. And part of it was because the danger that was there present. And so here in the danger and the fear that is certainly present, there's still a pleasure, right? Because there's a growing sense of confidence in himself, because he's been formed and he knows, like you're saying, he's a man now. And he's really, in this sentence, I really saw, like, he's embracing life. That's what we're seeing here. He's not a scared little boy running scared with a knife, you know, trying to, you know, get away from the Sorns or whoever he thinks they are, that, like, when he first landed. Like, no, like, he is a man now. And he is going through this, and he is really embracing life. So that was awesome to see that transformation really take fruit.
I love the part where he's continuing on, and then he kind of realizes there's a word that he never really discussed with the Haras, which is, road or path. And he kind of stops and thinks, like, I wonder if path is the same thing that a Ross would think, that a human would think. And then thankfully, though, it more or less is. As he finally gets through the clearing, I'm kind of skipping ahead for the sake of time.
No, yeah.
And now we're faced with the mountain. And just like with everything on this planet, it's not just a mountain. It is super, super, super tall. But it's somehow...
It's concave, right?
Yeah.
Like a tidal wave. Mm-hmm. Like, you know how a tidal wave crests over? And so it's kind of vertical at its base, but it kind of hangs over at the top. And so he's like, how am I going to get up that? And this is where he does indeed find some kind of a path. It's like, okay, this must be it, because this is the only way.
Mm-hmm.
What was it? Stairs without steps or something like
right.
that.
And as he says too, where as he's beginning his journey, he's like, look, if this formation or anything was like this on Earth, it would be impossible for any human to begin to climb or to try to get up it. But because of the planet, because of its buoyancy, lightness, I'm trying to figure out a way to describe it, but it's a lot easier to get up it.
It's got a lighter gravitational pull,
right, on everything, and including yeah. himself. But he realizes soon that even with that advantage, this is still going to be extremely difficult. And as he's getting up, he's realizing that it's so cold that he's unable to sweat. His hands are getting cold. He realizes, okay, I better stop now while it's still quote unquote warm enough. And that if I decide to try to press forward for a few hundred more yards and I try to stop up there, I'm going to die, because I'm just going to give up. So he stops and he's warming up his hands and everything else. But a question I had for you, because I don't remember them kind of talking about like what he's wearing at this point in time. So I'm curious if he's even prepared, you know, physically with his clothing and everything else. Because we know like right before it, the only thing he's got is like some of the weed from the grass as like food. And that's really right. about it.
Which at least he knows he can eat that now, so that's good.
So he stuffs his pockets with that, and he starts, you know, traversing up this mountain. Mm-hmm. But I can only imagine how cold he's getting, which is very, very cold. And I the part that I loved is when he kind of reaches a plateau, if you will. And if you know, you can kind of Gabe, if you want to describe that, where he starts seeing the world around him, and it's not a purplish haze anymore. It's more blue and more of what he, as he describes, as he would come as he was landing on the way down in the spaceship in the early chapters.
Yeah. So he's, like you said, he's climbing up. In terms of clothing, he's got on, I think, whatever clothes that he had on him. And I don't know if Weston or Divine supplied him with anything more like a coat or anything. But if you remember when they were, of course, how could you forget, Jason? It's all you ever talked about. When they were in the spaceship, they had to strip naked, of course, because of the heat from the sun. And when they landed, though, or as they were entering the atmosphere, they put all the clothes back on, because on the planet it was going to be considerably cooler, of course, than the proximity they had, the exposure they had to the sun's rays. So whatever clothes he had on him when they were unloading the spaceship,
mm-hmm.
and then the whole scene happened and he bolted, like that's what he has. You know, pants, shirt, coat, maybe, I'm not sure. That's kind of what he's had for this whole time here on the planet. So it's not nothing, but it's
right.
certainly not enough for what he is currently enduring. For the Hondramit, it was fine.
Right.
But for the Harandra, you know, the greater heights, no, obviously not. And so, like you said, he's climbing. He gets to this place. He's doing everything he can to be warm. He's slapping himself. He's you know, squatting. He's moving. He's doing everything he can. And he realizes, you know, like you're saying, this looks different. It the sky doesn't look blue anymore. And look, there's like a fog that was down in the Hadramaut, and I don't remember that being mm-hmm. there. And he mm-hmm. realizes that he's at the upper limits of the atmosphere. He's approaching the upper limits of the atmosphere. And so, yeah, like you're saying, that darkness that's there, that's space. He no longer sees sky the way that he saw sky through that blue sky that was, you know, created by the atmosphere of the planet. He sees, you know, that this blackness, and, you know, it's amazing. So but still, the old resolution is there, and it helps him to keep taking those necessary steps. There are times that he's doing it and he doesn't even remember why he's doing it or what he's doing, yeah. but it's driving him. And
yeah.
like for me, I'm like, man, like this is what we need. Like this is what virtue is. This is what good habits are, that, you know, like, I don't even remember yeah. when I started, you know, I don't know, making my bed every morning, but I do it and this is what I do. And I don't even think about it, you know, or praying morning prayers or whatever the case may be, any good habits that we have.
There's been a time or two when I've done, when I've run a marathon, you know, in that mile 20, 21, 22 of 26.2 miles, I know exactly what he's talking about, where you're so, you've hit this proverbial wall physically, mentally, you just want it to be over. You're thinking like, why did I sign up? What am I doing here? Where am I? I'm so delirious. I'm just mm-hmm. get this
I felt
done.
That same way at the end of the show Lost. Mm-hmm. Just
he did a Lost marathon and what was the purpose
going
of this
on here? And I don't even know what started this.
What's the black smoke monster? I mean, come on.
What are we even doing anymore?
Darn you, J.J. Abrams. Always starting things with great pilots and then bashing it in the ground. Please do not ruin Star Wars. Anyways.
So yeah, no, you're right. Like, that's a great that you're able to share that from your experience, that, yeah, like, this must be what he's feeling. And yeah, again, this is why it's important to make good, strong resolutions, why it's important to make good habits, so that it carries you. Just like you can see, this is carrying him through this.
Mm-hmm.
And just when he gets he's to the point where he's like, I just can't go any higher, he realizes, oh, I'm at the top now.
Right.
There is no higher.
Oh, he good. Looks out and he's like, oh, the other mountaintops are parallel to me.
Yeah, yeah, he's there, but he is suffering. I mean, he's gasping, he's dizzy, he's mm-hmm. in pain, he's struggling, and he finally sees this little light in the distance, and he remembers that he's supposed to look for somebody named Ogre, and so he's just looking for that Ogre's tower. Whoever Ogre is, he's got to get there. He's got to fight through. And so, you know, that this last pieces of the chapter here, this really is not so much the interior battle that we saw at the beginning of the chapter as much as the physical exterior battle with every step to get to his goal.
So
and, go ahead. Yeah.
Before you finish and before we get to the end of the chapter, like, I have a perfect personal analogy. Whenever this part of him seeing this light and just realizing that, oh, this is a lot further away than I first realized, because that's what he's saying. He's like, you know, I see a light ahead, a light which showed how dark the surrounding landscape was. As he says, you know, I tried to run in haste, but I'm so weak and everything else. And then he's like, oh, I reached it and found that it was far, far farther off than he had supposed. I did, you know, Crossroads, and I know you know this, Gabe, but for our audience, I did a pro-life walk across America back in 05 and 07. And whenever we would be out in, like, say, New Mexico or Nevada, and we would tell the car, okay, go drive like 5 miles away and park on the side of the road. So when we get to the 5 mile mark, we can replenish our water and stretch and get a little quick snack and move on ahead. And I kid you not, you would see the car, and in the middle of the night, because I would usually walk at night, you would see the van drive off, you'd see the taillights, and then you would see it park. And you would think, that can't be 5 miles. There's no way. We should not be able to see it that far. Man, that's not far at all. And then like an hour and a half later, you're finally getting to it. And you're like, oh my gosh. And then he would drive off for another 5 miles. And again, the same thing. You would see the lights 5 miles away. And you're thinking, it's so close. Yet so far away. So I was feeling Ransom totally in that moment.
So, yeah, I mean, you're right. That's what a great description for what he's feeling here. Yeah, so he keeps pushing, though. Stumbling in haste and weakness, he made for the light. And finally he comes at last to what seems like a cavern mouth. And the light within was an unsteady one. It was a delicious wave of warmth, right? It was fire. So that you've got light, you've got fire, you've got a shelter because you're in a cave. So he's just so thankful. And I love where this ends. It's so awesome that that there's two things in the cave that he saw. One of them dancing on the wall and roof was the huge angular shadow of a Sorn, and the other crouched beneath it was the Sorn himself. The end. Dun dun dun.
And then the dancing on the wall. So again, all I can picture is that stupid inflatable thing dancing in the wall in the shadow.
Yeah. The flicker of light, I'm sure, is doing a lot of that. But yeah, it's really easy to imagine that tall, wavy, inflatable, crazy guy. Hey, Ransom. Whatever he sounds like, who knows? Anyway.
Oh, man.
What a chapter, man.
Yes.
We're over halfway through this book.
Whoa.
Where do you think we're going? What do you think is going to happen here, man?
Oh, man. Well, I think
we've kind of had a lot happen.
Well, I think I predicted this, if I'm not mistaken.
It's tough to say because you've predicted a lot of things.
You know, a broken watch is right twice a day, right?
Right.
Well, I mean, obviously, he tells us what the mission is and what the plan is, the overall plan,
right
at the beginning of this chapter. The sure. mission is to get to Oriosa, to get to Meldalorn, to get over there. But we have to have some adventures in between. We can't just go from there. That'd be too boring and wouldn't make a long enough trilogy. So I don't think this is who he's supposed to meet yet. But I think this is, I don't think the Sorns are what he thinks they are. Meaning, you know, these horrible, sacrificial creatures that want to sacrifice him and kill him. I think he's going to get a dose of reality in a positive light, where I think he's going to get to see them in a different light. But I think he's also, here's my prediction, is I think he's going to get even more confused because, again, he's only had one point of view from the Haras. So now he's going to get a second point of view, one that he's not been encountered yet with the Sorns. And I can easily see this Sorn saying, oh, did those Haras tell you that? Man, they don't know anything. Because, again, the Haras kept saying, Sorn know that.
The Sorns would know that. But yeah, also I remember when the Harasa were talking about when he asked which one was greater, and the Harasa were like, well, they don't know this, they don't know that, they don't know poetry, they can't swim, they can't get in a boat, you know? And I can imagine, yeah, the Sorns have their own, you know, well, the Harasa, they're you know. They can't do this, they can't do that, you know, absolutely.
All they do is sit around and, you know, play their, you know, sing their so-called songs out of beat and weird rhythms and chants. But no. Here's the rub. Here's the tea. I'm going to spill it for you. Here we go, kind of thing. That is what I predict is he's going to get more confused. I think we're going to get more pieces to the puzzle with respect to Meldalorn. Is that right? Meldalorn?
Meldalorn.
Orosia or Orosa?
Oyarsa. Oyarsa.
I can't pronounce these, man.
No, you can't pronounce any of them, but that's fine. I can't pronounce it to
save my life. You know, we're just going to get more of the spirituality side of Melisandre. I was going to say the mythos, but this goes back, and this is the last thing I want to say about this, is going to this, where when he was going through his whole rationale thing, where he stops and says, you know, if you would have told me back in England about Eldils, I would have thought, oh, that's a funny myth, that's fantasy, it's not real. But I heard it, and it is real. And so that's all I know that is real, so that's what I'm going to follow, and I'm going to really stick to. So I'll be curious to see if the Sorns explain more about the Eldils for him and really shape his understanding better. But I really like that as far as the spirituality side, because, you know, how many times when people are like, oh, angels, oh, that's cute, oh, God, oh, you know, that's all make-believe and fantasy. It's like, no, I've heard him. Like, he has spoken to me. And because of that, I cannot follow. I have to follow. Cannot not follow is what I'm trying to say.
Can't stop, won't stop.
Nope.
And on that note, it's time to stop.
Thank y'all so much for listening. Let us know what you think. Let us know what you think about this chapter, where you think it's going to head. No spoilers, please. Best way to leave comments is over at our website, which is readingyourwaytoheaven.fireside.fm.
What?
And yeah, that's just let us know what you think.
If you go to that website, our website is the one I'm talking about when I say that website. readingyourwaytoheaven.fireside.fm, that one. You can interact with us. You can comment on particular episodes, like this one, for example. But if you go to the episode, the posting for two episodes ago, you can see a picture that my 7-year-old daughter drew of what she thinks Huey looks like. So if you remember, I mentioned that in the podcast, and you wanted to see what that looks like, you can see that, head over to our website. Again, that's readingyourwaytoheaven.fireside.fm. And you can check it out there, and you can leave a comment. You can share the website with people. You can see the different platforms that we're on, like Google Play and iTunes and Overcast and Spotify and, you know, all kinds of cool stuff over there. So please check us out, share it, like Jason was saying. And yeah, man, that's all I got.
Perfect. Well, thank y'all so much for listening. We'll talk to you in the next one. Gabe, love you, bye.
Love you, bye.